Thank you so much. Good evening, everyone. We're all doing well. Can you hear me okay?
Yes. Yeah.
So were some of you able to attend last week? Ruby, you were here in person last week. Were you able to attend online at all last week? You're online? Okay. Great. Because there's some things that will kind of continue on from last week's session, but it's also totally fine if you weren't online as well last week. So today we're really going to be talking about the two wings of Buddhism, and we'll get into that in more detail, and also do a lot of perspective taking. Cognitive reframing, I guess, would be the kind of psychological standpoint, and try to bring it into our own experience as well. Okay. So we just begin with a cultivate a motivation for being here. And really the purpose of our lives is to be happy. And in order to do that, we need to generate warm-heartedness within ourselves and learn how to expand that out to others. And through this evening's session, to be able to cultivate that practice. So as His Holiness says, our happiness and suffering are directly related to the objects our mind focuses on and our thoughts or interpretations of them. So really kind of looking at how, you know, Buddhism is a mind science in the sense that our experiences are created by our mind, how we perceive things, how we interpret them. And using warm-heartedness and compassion as a way to continue to cultivate that. So I think you would have heard of like the two wings of a bird, right? So the wing of compassion and the wing of wisdom. Okay, so basically like, you know, Buddhism proposes that we need these two wings to follow a meaningful direction. They work kind of hand in hand. So if we just had one wing, you know, we would fly around in circles, right? So the compassion gives the wisdom direction, like a proper direction. And vice versa, right? Wisdom also helps to direct our compassion as well. So they work hand in hand. Right? One cannot kind of function properly without the other. Okay. So they're really kind of indispensable in that way. They're interdependent and they kind of rely on one another to move in the right direction. Okay. And we'll do a lot of practice tonight as well, just a little bit of stabilizing meditation and analytical meditation as well to help us with how we're going to really perceive these things. So let's think about this a little bit in terms of warm-heartedness or compassion, right? As we saw last week in terms of like the science of altruism, compassion or warm-heartedness gives us a sense of connection, right? We feel more, we tend to kind of participate in more pro-social behaviors and kindness and compassion are kind of at the forefront of our intentions or motivations behind what we do, which in turn help to kind of open the heart and have a more kind of expansive perspective, which kind of moves into that the wisdom field of seeing how all our experiences are based on causes and conditions, and in that way everything is interconnected. Right? So the mind shapes our experiences by the perceptions and interpretations that we have. Okay. So let's look at some practical examples of this with compassion and wisdom, right? If one was just cultivating compassion all the time without wisdom, okay, then there is a chance that, you could be potentially taken advantage of, right? Because you're thinking about others all the time, and you could kind of come across as maybe being a little bit soft, and people will start taking advantage of you always kind of just serving others all the time. Right. Whereas if we were just so focused on wisdom and our interdependence and our interconnection, right, we might actually become a little bit more socially isolated as well. Right. Because we're kind of losing the empathy, the compassion, and we're starting to kind of maybe be a little bit more socially isolated. Right. So in that way, we kind of require both of them to really think, okay, how can I be compassionate in this situation, even if it might look like some tough love, right? Even if it might be like this might be difficult for this person at the beginning, but my intention or my motivation behind it is to actually help them, right? So we use wisdom and compassion hand in hand to serve others and benefit others. But we really think about it's not necessarily just doing what the other person wants all the time. Right? Because if we're always just, just trying to like please someone else, be a people pleaser, for example, right? A yes person, okay? Then we also run ourselves into the ground sometimes, right? Or put ourselves into difficult situations. Okay, so that's why the balance is essential. Right. And within Buddhism and also within science, right, you can say like compassion is part of our very nature. Right? We observe it in animals. Okay. And from a Buddhist perspective, compassion and wisdom are a part of us all the time. And so it's not something that we necessarily like get from outside, it's an uncovering from within. So let's start with like a little bit of a meditation now. And I'll kind of go through it a little bit first. And then help you kind of direct the meditation, while we practice. But we're going to look specifically now at kind of perspective taking. A lot of today's session is going to be on kind of perspective taking and how our mind, basically broadening our perspectives or opening our mind to different ways of looking at things, to different angles, to not necessarily believing that the way we see something, my perspective, my reality is the actual way. Okay. Understanding that, like, the way, everyone in this room is perceiving their reality is not necessarily the ultimate reality. And we can look at that through lots of different viewpoints. Okay. And I'll get to like I'll talk about it in detail later, but there's this parable, this story of like these blind individuals that are touching an elephant for the first time. Have you heard of this story? The parable of the elephant? Okay. So like one person touches like the leg and they think, oh, this elephant is like a trunk, a tree, right? The other person touches like the elephant's belly and they're like, oh, it's like a wall, right? The other blind person touches the elephant's trunk or tail and it's like, oh, this is a rope, right? And so everyone, and they believe that experience to be true, right? Based on their limited interpretation, right? So that is kind of like an analogy or a metaphor for kind of what we experience as well through our senses. Okay, if that makes sense. So, we'll talk about that in more detail later, but essentially in this particular meditation, we're going to use our awareness, our innate awareness, to really kind of analyze our experiences of happiness and suffering and how they depend on our own thoughts and attitudes. Okay, so although we might understand it intellectually, we talk about these things and intellectually we understand that we nod our heads, right? And we're like, okay, yes, we get this. The key thing is how can we bring it into our practice, our experience? How can we use that word gom meditation, the Tibetan word gom, to familiarize ourselves with the experience so that when things happen in our everyday life all the time, we don't necessarily react impulsively, right? But we use the familiarization techniques, we use the meditation, we use the awareness to cultivate different perspectives that lead to more wholesome states of being. Right? And that is just essentially a practice, a mind training. So that is what we're doing when we're meditating, right? Or when we're just bringing awareness to everything we do in life, right? We don't necessarily have to, of course, it's really nice and wonderful that we're here and we've made that effort to actually, sit in a chair or on a cushion and meditate and really kind of analyze this because it's the environment plays a big role in that, right? Okay, we're all here, we have a similar purpose or a similar motivation for being here. But the reality is like the goal for us is to be able to implement this into everything we do. Right? Whether we're driving, whether we're exercising, whether we're cooking, whether we're washing the dishes, whether we're reading to our kids, whether we're having a coffee with a friend, whatever it may be, right? We're bringing awareness to our experiences. Okay. So let's try to do that. Right? So what we're going to do in this particular meditation is we're going to recall a moment of discomfort. Doesn't have to be crazy discomfort, okay? Don't get too deep with it, as my kids say to me. Okay, doesn't have to be too deep. Doesn't have to be too uncomfortable, right? But try to observe this experience of discomfort and whether it's coming from outside of us or not. Where does it actually come from? Okay. So, for example, like the weather, that experience of the weather, right? I was just saying that welcome to Brisbane winter, right? And how we relate to that. We all might relate to Brisbane winter differently based on our experiences, right? So, you might get someone come over from Scandinavia and be like, oh, this is winter, this is our summer. Right, they're absolutely loving this, and this is like the perfect temperature. Whereas others are all rugged up and like got our beanies on and all the rest of it, right? So much of it is to do with our perspectives. Okay, the same thing you could say for food, right? We all try the same food. Right? I give you like let's say Vegemite is a perfect Aussie example. right? Because it's such an acquired taste. But like once had an Italian roommate at university, and I think he had I gave him his first Vegemite sandwich, and I think he thought it was Nutella, like because of just like the color. And he just couldn't, like it was just like the biggest shock of his life, right? His first experience of a Vegemite sandwich. So we might all have it, we might all eat a Vegemite sandwich, the same thing, but experience it completely differently based on our upbringing, our culture, what we've eaten, all of that, right? So is Vegemite inherently good? Right? Is it inherently tasty? Right? Or what's our perspective? Okay. With the weather, whatever. So just discomfort, an exact that's just those are just a couple of examples of discomfort, just so we don't need to get too deep with it. Right. But just like really analyzing where our experience comes from. Right. And whether it's possible to feel okay, even under difficult circumstances, by shifting our mindset, by looking at it differently. By coming home, I guess, coming home to this place in ourself, this innate well-being, this compassion and wisdom, and seeing how we can use that to outweigh any kind of uncomfortable feeling sensation that we experience with our senses or whatever. Right? And then through the meditation, once we've experienced that, we're going to try to broaden it, right? We're going to familiarize ourselves with it. We're going to try to internalize it. And we're going to try to broaden it to other perspectives, right? Which will hopefully help us to understand our capacity for growth and change. The neuroplasticity that we talk about. And keep your eyes slightly closed. Sit up straight, not too rigid. And just take stock of any physical sensations. The warmth against the seat. Your hands in your lap. And now I invite you to connect with your breath. And just observe the inhale. And exhale. There's no need to conjure up any thoughts yet. Just be with the breath. Mind wanders. Just gently return to the breath. And from this relaxed state of mind, just bring to mind a feeling of discomfort. Shouldn't be something that causes you too much stress. Just something that made you feel a bit challenged or difficult or uncomfortable. Think of something you're maybe dealing with at work or at home. A habitual tendency. Just be aware of how that makes you feel. You might experience a physical sensation in the body. Just observe it. It go. And I invite you to question whether this experience of discomfort came from outside of you. Like the very nature of the experiences causing you negativity. From beyond yourself. And how do your perspectives, your way of looking at this experience, how do they create the experience? How do they create what you come to know and believe is true? Is it possible to look at this moment of discomfort from a different angle? How might somebody else experience this? What might a trusted friend say about it? And with the sense of compassion and wisdom, we have within ourselves, can we use it to outweigh the distress? To develop a wider perspective, it's not be narrow-minded with it. Just analyze the experience. Is there a capacity for growth and change? Just gently bring yourself back to the room. And as I like to do, I think sharing and learning from each other, I think, is key. And I'd love us to talk about how this practice can bring about thought transformation in our daily life. So this kind of cognitive reframing, the center is named after Lungri Tangpa, who is famous for thought transformation. These teachings are called Lojong teachings, right? And it's about using any conditions, right? Outer conditions or inner conditions, experiences of suffering or distress to bring about a positive change or a positive experience. So the ancient tradition of thought transformation is hand in hand with the modern science of how we can reframe our experiences. Right, and we talked about that in the brain as being kind of this gamma wave activity, and we have these aha moments. So any kind of stories or experiences to share? No difference.
I struggle at the same point.
You struggle at the
It's
same point, yeah.
like an awareness, but there's a body reaction as opposed to a thought reaction.
But I think that's actually really good, you know, that in a sense that you're experiencing the awareness of it, and you're experiencing the physical sensation. You've looked at it from different angles, and you still reach the same kind of frustrated conclusion. And I think part of that is because there sometimes are like frustrating outcomes, and that's just the nature of some of these systems where that we're bound by, you know, but being aware of them, being aware of that frustration, and is fantastic, right? And just kind of like not, you know, being tough on yourself for not being able to find a different solution, or being able to like necessarily change that attitude, but just being almost complimentary of yourself for being like able to be aware of it, to continue to analyze it now. And it might be that like you start to look at it from different perspectives later, like it'll, you know, it'll start to soften, or you might see it in a different way. It will change. But I think there are some things that are kind of like a systemic that are frustrating, and those are things that we learn to accept because we can't change them. And right, or if it is something that we feel like we can change or manipulate in some way, that we look to do that, you know. But I think it's wonderful that you just have the awareness of it, including the physical like sensation of the, you know, the frustration or inability to find a solution, honestly. Yeah. Anyone else? Any other thoughts? So,
Relationships.
would you say the increased awareness that's been cultivated through practice has softened the extreme of the experience?
Oh, definitely. Yeah, sure.
So, I think that is a real example of like integration into your life and your experience, right?
Takes a lot of
It
time
takes a
to
lot of
figure
time,
out
yeah. Yeah.
what's good.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I was on a totally different experience when I was doing this. I was more of a Vegemite. I think got sidetracked by the Vegemite. But there's like a Vegemite in a completely different context. So some of you may or may not have heard of Nüne practice. It's a like a fasting practice that is done in Tibetan Buddhism, to Chen Rezig, the Buddha of Compassion. And you know, many traditions have fasting, right? And this particular Nüne practice is where you do like one pair consists of, let's say you go in on a Friday night, and then on Saturday morning or Saturday before noon, you have one meal and you can drink water all day. And then the next day you don't eat, like when you go to bed that night, let's say Saturday night, you don't eat or drink anything until you wake up on Monday morning. Right. So from Saturday night until Monday morning, so all through Sunday, you don't eat or drink a drop. And you're doing like all these practices and prayers and prostrations, like full body length prostrations to Avalokiteshvara Chenrezig, Rezig, the Buddha of Compassion. And it's a very intense purification practice. And it was actually developed by Galangma Palmo, Bhikshuni Lakshmi, like she was actually a princess who developed leprosy. But she healed herself through this practice. She healed her leprosy through this practice. And it's been used now, like, you know, within the Tibetan Buddhist tradition as kind of like one of the great purification practices. And it is absolutely extraordinary. It's amazing. The first time I ever did it was like extremely difficult. And then but I did it in like a Tibetan monastery in Nepal. And what they give you after like fasting for, you know, essentially not eating or drinking for, I guess, like around 36 hours or something like that, they give you like a rice soup, right? And this particular rice soup. They put all these things into it to like make it taste a little bit better, the rice soup, but it's actually got like this like hard yak cheese and all these other things in there that like I couldn't do like after full fasting. Like I just couldn't stomach it. I couldn't just give me the rice. I just couldn't stomach all these other little things that they put in there, these kind of like dried yak cheese and everything. And I remember like the first time doing like eating this, and I was just like feeling completely nauseated. And I was like, this is after like this intense fasting and watching everybody around me like just loving it. And like they, as a sign of like gratitude and appreciation, they're licking the bowl clean, and I was like trying, and I was just like I couldn't do it. So then the next time I did the practice, you're supposed to bring your own bowl, right? But I didn't bring my own bowl, because I didn't want to, partake in this experience. So then, like at the monastery, they gave me a bowl, and they may have given me a spoon or not, but then they saw like I didn't want the soup. And then there was a guy next to me, another practitioner next to me, and he was like really, because everyone's like really, they're all loving it, right? And they're like really worried about why I'm not eating it. And so like, in the Tibetan culture, like it's totally fine. He just like licked his spoon clean, took a napkin out, and just did that, and gave me the spoon. And I was like, no, it's okay. And then even another time, the abbot, like when I was like, I didn't want the soup, the abbot of the monastery actually gave me his, like as an extreme sign of like that. And then like there was only one other foreigner in the meditation hall and during the practice that was doing it, an older American lady, and she turned to me and said, "You're gonna have to eat it now." And so I did, but it was like it's just so interesting, like how like their perspective, like after doing this fasting retreat, is like you've got to have this like delicious, this delicious rice soup, and I'm like I just can't do it, and so like it's an example of like, is that rice soup intrinsically good or not, right? And using that same example with everything we experience, right? And we see that like we have our limited perspective, and we see that as like the ultimate reality. Okay. And those kind of perspective taking moments are gonna we experience day in and day out with all our interactions, because we have things that are extremely human about us, that we experience things actually in many similar ways, right? But we also have our really unique perspectives. So yeah, that's really interesting. So like, in terms of your experience back with the loan manager or whatever, is I guess one thing that you could do is like really put you, and we'll do this practice a little bit later, is really put yourself in the shoes of the loan manager. Just like you are the loan manager, like really try to experience it, just flip it and put yourself there, and just like try to analyze everything from that person's situation, and see if it changes your perspective or not. There you go. So look, that's wonderful. Like looking at like what the common experiences are as well, right? And that's often like in places of conflict. Like that's what, people within conflict resolution will tell you, is like, okay, what can we go back to as being something that we can agree upon, right? And in that situation, it's those two points that you succinctly, expressed, right? Yeah.
Were you able to sleep when you didn't eat at all?
I was, but actually, food doesn't, for me, this is my experience. Everybody has a different experience, but with the fasting experience, I find it much more difficult going without liquids, without water, than without food. The food becomes, usually for me, I'm surprised at how the food is like a non-event anymore. It's like I'm not interested in food. But I'm really struggling without water. Yeah, that's what I experience. But I'm able to sleep, but with it, probably don't sleep as well. Yeah, amazing. No, that's really great. So just like creating that space, right? This is kind of what that space is like, I think, creating that opportunity for awareness, right? Observing the stimuli, observing the situation. Without kind of impulsive reactions. Fantastic. So we're now going to move into just continuing to enhance practices to continue to enhance our wisdom and compassion or warm-heartedness. Right. So Shakyamuni Buddha, the Buddha of our time, who lived 2,500 years ago, says people who see only one side of things engage in quarrels and disputes. So that's kind of what we've been talking about, looking at multiple angles, being able to put ourselves in somebody else's shoes, the power of perspective taking, right? And then really looking at like wisdom through the intellectual understanding of dependent arising, right? So everything is interconnected. Okay. And we'll use some different examples of how we see that, but like all phenomena are conditioned and are dependent on other things and result from causes and conditions. So, for example, a beautiful tree in our backyard. Right? That tree didn't just come out of nowhere. We didn't just come out of nowhere, right? We were created by causes and conditions. Okay, there needs to be the cause and condition of a sperm and an egg, for example, of being of growing in our mother's womb. Okay, of the tree having the right conditions, the soil, the sunlight, the water, and so on and so forth, right? Everything is created upon causes and conditions. Okay. And in the same way, like our experiences as humans, right? As Pauline, as Ruby, as all of us, right? They are dependent on so many different factors, right? Countless factors. Some that we can probably analyze and be aware of, and some that we're unaware of. Okay. But the more we can understand our interdependence, right, the more we can begin to widen our perspective. And then if we apply that same knowledge to others, right, we can learn to understand like where they're coming from and the different experiences and beliefs and causes and conditions that have shaped them and who they are. Okay. So this is really like an aspect of wisdom, right? This ability to analyze ourselves as being like the of coming into being because of so many, like who we are right now in this very moment, so many different causes and conditions. Even who we are right now is like it's constantly changing based on what we're hearing, how we're communicating with one another, like constantly shifting, constantly changing. Right? So as I said, like that experience, for example, of what we like, like our tastes, like Vegemite versus the rice porridge. Okay, that's a lot of it is our upbringing, right? The weather we like, the weather we don't like, the humor we enjoy, right? This the movies that we might like or be inf or have influenced us, right? There's so many things that have created who we are. Our parents, how we've been raised, the love and affection we were given, so on and so forth. So, actually, before we're going to do another meditation, But before we do that, can you think of how, like, you are who you are because of so many different causes and conditions, right? Who raised you, who cared for you, where you got your education, right? How that influenced your views, your beliefs. Habits, right? Whether some of these things might be genetic or behavioral because of outer conditions, all these things have had some kind of impact. And we tend to think that that's just like we because we think so much from our own perspective, we think that's just us, that's just me, like I'm having this experience. But we've all, countless sentient beings, all have that same experience of being subject to causes and conditions, of being subject to dependent origination. And when we really understand that, when we really try to analyze that and understand that, it helps us to develop more compassion, more warm-heartedness. Right? Because, like, their experience of reality has been subject to so many different causes and conditions that some of those things they don't really have, like, they don't even realize that themselves and why they're maybe behaving a certain way. Right. Why do some people, maybe get more angry or respond emotionally? Somebody that you might have a difficult relationship with. So on that note, we'll do like a little bit of perspective taking and another analytical meditation where we're going to think about a situation that involves another person that was conflicting. Okay. And we're just going to recall what happened, your thoughts first, like think about it completely from your situation. Okay. In this conflict, could be someone at work, could be something that just happened today, could be someone within your family or a friend or whoever, right? But we're going to really kind of experience it from our perspective, how it felt physically, mentally, emotionally. I'm going to ask what made the situation maybe less, what could have made the situation less disturbing. Try not to get too carried away. The point is not to get too carried away in your emotions, like get totally like sucked back into the story and go all the way with it, right? But just really kind of give yourself some space in the meditation. Observe it, analyze it, be aware, kind of like what Ash was talking about. Okay. And then really try to put yourself in the other person's shoes. Really try to imagine you are the other person. Use your creativity, right? Use your imagination to put yourself in that person's shoes. How it feels to be them. If you want, you can go way back, what it was to be like in their mother's womb. If you know their parents, maybe some idea about who raised them, how they were raised, what environment, under what circumstances, conditions, what genetic elements are part of that experience, right? And then as them, as if you were them, think about their thoughts, their feelings, their behaviors. Okay. What their needs might be, what their context is, what their experience is. You can ask yourself, like, what would have made the situation less disturbing to you if you were the other person as well? Any questions about this before we do the practice? I'm just trying to do this practice.
Just the last stop.
Yeah.
The side of being in their shoes.
Yeah, from the side of being in their shoes. Yeah. Yeah. You can do it. You can ask that same on both sides.
Okay.
When you're, yeah, first as you and then as the other person or the person in the conflict. And it might be helpful to really, again, nothing too extreme, but something that, like, you know, maybe at work as a specific personality, maybe a boss, maybe whatever, you know, maybe it could be anyone, friend, a sibling, an enemy, whatever. But somebody, something that happens maybe quite frequently that you're familiar with. So again, just in the usual way. Yourself into your physical experience. Straighten your spine. Get comfortable in your chair. Try to keep your body relaxed. As with a relaxed body, we also have a relaxed mind. Just begin to observe your breath. And bring about a recent situation where there was some kind of conflict with you and another person. It might not be a specific conflict. It might just be somebody you tend to butt heads with or just not see eye to eye with. I invite you to recall what it's like to interact with that person. Just notice how these interactions might feel in your body. Just Just observe. Don't get carried away by those sensations, just see them. And you can think how wonderful that you see them. Observe your perspective. Where does it come from? What are the influences or the causes and conditions that have helped to give rise to or formulate your perspective, your truth? Your parents, our friends, our culture, our environment. What has created these beliefs? Is there any way that you could look on it, this particular conflict, made it less disturbing for you? Can you let it go? Or what part of it can you let go? Now I invite you to put yourself in that other person's shoes. Really try to imagine yourself as that person. And use the power of your creativity to think all the causes and conditions that have made that person who they are. Their upbringing. Their culture, their beliefs, their influences, their hopes, their aspirations. their experience of their reality. Now you can ask yourself, why might a person react in that way or have that perspective, that point of view? And as Chad talked about in his conflict of looking for the commonalities, can you now broaden your perspective and looking at you and the other person think about what common ground you two might share? You both want to be happy. Both don't want to suffer. In this case, you both might want the same thing, but you just believe that your path to getting it is different. So as we step back, what paths can we take? What angles can we perceive? And how can we continue to cultivate warm-heartedness for ourselves and the other person, compassion for ourselves and that other person in this difficult experience? Just take a few more deep breaths. Let go of any physical sensations this may have brought up. Just bring your awareness back to the room. So the power of perspective taking, did it help? How did it really feel to, or how did it feel to really put yourself in someone else's shoes? So it was difficult, but it did calm the experience of the crankiness. Beautiful.
Yeah,
beautiful. And I think like that's what we have to somehow sometimes come to, is that like there can be experiences maybe when we feel like people are being like really cruel, you know. And can we still cultivate compassion for those people? Like what must they be experiencing to be doing that, right? So that's why, like, you know, in Tibetan Buddhism, they say like our biggest enemies are our best teachers, right? They're our best teachers. So if everything's always rosy, actually, it's we're not actually practicing. So people who make life really, really difficult for ourselves, right? It's one of the 8 verses of thought transformation, you know? May I regard that person as my greatest teacher. The ones that just make it really difficult, right? And then if we see that person as our greatest teacher, if we really see it, it's like, wow, wonderful. And that you can cultivate that thought transformation yourself and that ability to forgive and generate compassion also really shows that you're doing the practice, you know. This is something that's like probably not so much part of a Buddhist mind science course really, but I think within family context, there's so much karma. Like there's so like the causes and condition, karma being like the causes and conditions from a Buddhist perspective since, you know, countless lifetimes, that also create sometimes like these relationships that you just like, where is this coming from? You know, and you know, sometimes we use that to be like, okay, this is also like my own purification, right? My own karma, the roles could very well have been reversed in a previous life, you know? Yeah. But I think that, you know, you continuing to cultivate compassion for that is actually in a way like, in a way is also teaching her, you know, slowly, like it'll, in terms of like, yeah, just slowly, gently, subtly teaching that like, even if there's the constant blame, there's also the, it can be managed with compassion. Or we'll just do one at a time otherwise. Like, yeah, you know, people have different ways. And like, actually with the situation that I was kind of meditating on and analyzing, it came down to actually, I was thinking like philosophical differences, like people can have best intentions, but just like philosophical, like are philosophically opposed or like philosophically not in agreement on something. And so like, they just might believe that their way is right. And so but I felt like by understanding that basis, by coming to that conclusion, it kind of also softens it a bit and makes it more gentle and be like, okay, like let's discuss it without getting emotional, right? Without getting kind of impulsive, like let's just discuss it from those different angles and perspectives, right? And try to generate some kind of resolution that is maybe not necessarily all the way here or all the way there, not necessarily what I'm saying, not necessarily what you're saying, but try to find some balance or midpoint. Right. Again, it's just like that, a tool for conflict resolution, right? And trying not to get too emotional or too strong with our own beliefs, but also being able to say like, this is why I see things this way. This is why I believe what I believe. And giving them an opportunity to say, this is why they're coming at it from this perspective. And then you try to find common ground. Yeah, I mean, I think yeah, we go further and further back, and you know, there are so many things we don't understand, we don't take for granted because we just judge a book by its cover. When we meet someone we don't like, you know, the way they carry themselves, whatever, quick to make a judgment, right? And then that's it, right? But if we really try to like take a step back, analyze, then you know, it can be, as Anne said, helpful. Yeah, fantastic. Gosh, the time goes by quickly. So, you know, just some tips for the petals. And so what can we do, like, you know, just in these situations, right? Just explore other perspectives. Take a breath, step back, try not to act impulsively, explore other perspectives, right? Explore your own perspective, where you're coming from. See what changes. Okay. And you can know that, like, just understanding another view doesn't mean that you have to agree with it necessarily, right? You don't have to, when you put yourself in someone else's shoes, you don't have to agree with them, right? You can stay very true to your view and your perspective. In fact, by perspective taking, it might actually solidify your own perspective, your own view, right? Because you've been, okay, I've looked at this, I've looked at that, I've looked at it from so many different angles, and I actually feel more secure in my perspective, right? So it might solidify your experience, which is also good, right? But try to cultivate like a larger, bigger picture, stepping outside of your own kind of emotional kind of getting emotional with things and look at it from a larger view, a bigger picture. And know that also, like, this perspective taking shift, as you were saying, Pauline, takes time, right? It doesn't happen instantly. It's something that we'll gradually do, but we can find ourselves like trying to do it a little bit tomorrow, you know, and then maybe a little bit more the next day in different situations in our lives, right? And notice when you were treating your interpretation as like the reality of things, the way of things, right? This is my experience, or this is my reality. Tell yourself, hang on, wait a second. Is it the reality? Analyze, right? Ask, what am I not seeing in this situation? Right? What's beneath the lotus? And so that was just this, going back over, that was this, this parable, the story of the blind person seeing the elephant, right? Okay, that I talked about, but I think it's a really good analogy. I mean, it's an ancient Indian story, right? But it's how all these different people have a different experience and base their own opinions off of their experience, right? And we do the same thing. Like in this case, it's from a lack of a sense, right? They unfortunately don't have the ability to see, but our senses do the same thing. Our senses are thieves and tricks for us as well, right? Because like we might smell something, we might taste something, we might see something and have total judgments based on that, right? And we do that with ourselves all the time, right? We look at ourselves in the mirror and based on our understanding of reality, we make judgments of ourselves, right? I'm like this, I'm like that. I'm too short, I'm too tall, I'm too fat, I'm too thin, I'm too this, I'm too that, right? Our senses, what we see, what we smell, what we taste, what we hear are constantly forming opinions. But our senses are actually not necessarily telling us that this is ultimate truth. So really we're trying to develop this wisdom that we have within us, trying to uncover it, see the real picture. So for the last bit of time, we're going to shift back. We've talked about the four measurables a little bit with our dedications. We're really trying to understand the practice of the four measurables as a tool for generating greater wisdom and compassion. So Kabje Lamazo Brumache, the founder of FBMT, one of the founders of FBMT, along with Lama Yeshe, says if we take care of others, we work for their happiness, we are automatically taking care of ourselves. Trying to make other happy, trying to make others happy is the best way of loving ourselves. It's the best way of loving ourselves. Similarly, if we harm others, we harm ourselves. Harming others does not bring us peace and happiness, only misery and grief, now and in the future. Bringing happiness to others is the best way of bringing happiness to ourselves. It follows naturally. It happens by the way. It happens naturally when we do this. Right? It's like it's a natural consequence. Right? Things we do that bring happiness to others have a beneficial effect on our own minds. So when we talk about the four measurables, the first measurable being, you know, may all beings possess happiness and the causes for happiness. That is a real sincere focus on loving kindness and the wish that oneself and others find happiness. And then compassion is linked to the second immeasurable. May all beings be separated from suffering and the causes of suffering, and a sincere wish that that happens. And the third immeasurable is may all beings never be separated from the happiness that knows no suffering. Right? This is sympathetic joy. Joy at seeing the successes and virtues of others. And then may all beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment and aversion, not holding some close and others distance. It's about this balanced attitude, cultivating equanimity. Okay. So looking at this chart here, those four measurables also have like far enemies and close enemies. And we've got to be really wary of the close enemies to the four measurables in terms of cultivating that. So for may all beings possess happiness and the causes for happiness, for developing this loving kindness, right? It's really clear that the opposite of that is like ill will, hostility, anger, hatred, right? But a close enemy might be like attachment, where we actually exaggerate the qualities of someone, right? And being kind of needy or graspy or wanting that for ourselves, wanting them in a possessive way. Okay. Compassion, a far enemy, would be the opposite, right? Being cruel, being a contempt or hatred. But a close enemy might be this kind of feeling of pity or kind of sympathetic or grief or distress, right? When you notice suffering, and you want to kind of move away from that experience or push it away, right? Or you acknowledge suffering from a stance of superiority. You see something you don't want to see, and it's just like you kind of separate yourself from it. Okay. So that's not a compassionate attitude. And then with sympathetic joy, like the far enemy would be like envy, for example. Right, not feeling joy for someone, not rejoicing, but yeah, feeling envy or jealousy or cynicism, right? But that kind of might be misconstrued, or a close enemy would be like hedonism, right, where we kind of delight in pleasures and worldly achievements. And then with equanimity, we might have biased attitudes, right? But a close enemy would be like if you're kind of indifferent or apathetic, and that's not something we want to cultivate either. So we'll just do one kind of closing meditation, and I'll combine them a little bit. We'll just do a little, just a 5 minutes just to finish up. But again, like now it's kind of trying to bring this practice that we've been doing the whole evening into recognizing what we have in common with others, our common ground. Kind of what Chad talked about at the beginning and what he did. Right. Just take a couple deep breaths. Settle into the practice. And just come to the understanding that all of us here tonight, people on the call, everyone on this planet, they have an aspiration to find well-being and to avoid suffering. And bring to mind someone who is like a neutral person that you're neither close to or somebody that you find unpleasant, just totally neutral. And notice that this person also just wants to be happy and free from suffering. Now bring to mind somebody like an enemy or somebody who is unpleasant. That you don't have so a great relationship with. And also observe how this person just wants to be happy. And free from suffering. And then do the same for someone you really love and care about. This person too just wants to be happy and free from suffering. And you recognize something you have in common with all these people, neutral, unpleasant, or pleasant. We all have that wish to be happy and free from suffering. Now I invite you to recall a moment of loving kindness. A moment where you felt genuine compassion. Genuine happiness. Or gratitude. Stay in that experience for a while. Let yourself enjoy it. Give it to yourself. Think about a time you've been cared for. And I invite you to say to yourself, may I be happy? Now extend this loving kindness to others. And as we do that, we can just dedicate positive energy that all beings have happiness and the causes of happiness. That all beings be free from suffering and the causes of suffering. That all beings never be separated from the happiness that knows no suffering. That all beings abide in equanimity, free from attachment and aversion. Thank you, everyone.